This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, you're tuned into The Property Show, a weekly take on all things property related. I'm Sim Wee Boon. It's the last Friday of the month, and as usual, is the Property Legal Clinic. Today's guest on the show is Khairul Anwar bin Chaharuddin, a lawyer with Khairul, Suhaila and Hazlina, specializing in property, banking and corporate law with more than 20 years' experience. He's written a few books under the Ask the Lawyer series about buying properties in Malaysia and applying for property loans. Thank you for joining us today, Khairul.
Yeah, good morning, Sim. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, so we're going to start out with our first question, which comes from a guy named Wei Tan. He emailed it in, and this is the situation he's described in his email. I have a service apartment which I only got the key from a developer in December 2017. The defect liability period ended in November 2019. Currently, in October 2020, my lower unit lodged a report about leakage problems from my toilet unit, causing his toilet's plaster ceilings to drop. As per the report of the investigation by JMB management, the cause is due to waterproofing issues, and now I'm liable to repair the leakage. However, I noticed the leakage had been there for a long time and probably happened before the expiry of the defect liability, which means that the leakage issue should have been reported during the warranty period and the developer should have bear the cost to repair. Now, he wants to know if he should bring this issue to the Housing and Local Government Ministry or does he directly claim it to the developer? I mean, what can he do? Khairul, what are your thoughts?
Actually, in this matter, because he said that his property is a service apartment, so it's not really an apartment per se. So it's you must look at it on that particular issue. That's one issue. And then the other thing is his defect liability period according to his sale and purchase agreement, which I think should be in the normal Schedule H of our Act. So that particular thing is another issue that he must take into account. But the question that he asked is actually he knows the situation and it seems that he's already on the attack mode trying to bring the issue to straight to KPKT or the developer. The thing about living in a strata property, you are sharing everything with your neighbors. Okay, your floor is is the ceiling of your neighbors. Your ceiling is the floor of your neighbors, and your sides are also your neighbors. So when it comes to this, it's more like you have to compromise in doing any claims. So the first thing I'll suggest to him is actually talk to the neighbors below and then tell him that you want to solve this issue. And then the second thing is bring it to your management corporation, okay, your JMB or even if it's already, I think it's already time that he already has a management corporation in his condominium, in his service apartment. So bring the issue and ask them to solve it first. And then see whether they are willing to cooperate with you and whether they want to resolve the issue. Because I have the same problem. I mean, this is a personal thing that I had with my service apartment. My service apartment is not really a service. It's an office, but on top of me is a service apartment. So I brought it to my management corporation and it seems that without having for me to make a claim anywhere, they are willing to resolve it. They repair the problem, and I got a unit which is free from any defect. So, and this is already because I saw that in his timeline, it's already 1 year after his defect liability period. His for him to do a liquidated ascertain damage claim. So he actually straight away assumed that the developer will not repair it. So my suggestion is to have a discussion with the developer, whether with the management corporation, because it's already passed to the management corporation, whether they are willing to repair the problem. And then if that fails, if anywhere that fails, the nobody wants to repair it, the defect is still there, I suggest to bring it to the strata tribunal. We now have a strata tribunal which solves this kind of problem. A strata tribunal is cheaper for him to go other than just straight away bring it to KPKT. Actually, it's a part of KPKT. So the strata tribunal will hear him, and in the strata tribunal, as a tribunal, you don't need lawyers. You just pay 50 ringgit to register your case, and the management corporation or the developer will have to answer to them whether they are going to resolve it or not.
This strata tribunal, it's just you register your case. I mean, will there be a hearing? I mean, how does that process work? Is it a, do they have to kind of like...
It's more friendlier than the court, and it's cheaper. Sometimes it sits by the tribunal chairman, and then the chairman will call up your the tribunal will call your case. The chairman will hear your need. Both party has to answer, and they are not supposed to be represented by any lawyer or legal counsel. Usually, a developer will send their in-house legal counsel. They will answer it. It depends on their policy. So they will try to rectify it.
All right. We're moving on to our second question now. This comes from Diane. So she has a question. What are the considerations that I need to make when buying a house with my sister? Can we both put our names on the house? And what happens if there's a dispute in the future?
Okay. I once gave a talk about sharing property, and this is not... These are siblings, right? They are sister, you say, want to buy it with his sister, Diana said. So my suggestion, actually, when I was giving that particular talk, was to have an agreement, even if it's between sisters, even between brothers, or even between siblings, and even within colleagues that you know. Because it's something that I do also. I still have a property which is not with my wife, but with another person, which I shared it with a colleague, and I've been sharing it since 2006, I think. So, but we have a cordial relationship, and we have a fiduciary relationship because I'm the partner of the other person in the company. So, we bought it during the time when the property business that you can say was good, and it was a shop house. So we signed an agreement about if any one of us pass away first, or if there is a dispute between us on other matter, well, how do we divide the ownership of the property? Who has the right to sell it? And so we put a few clauses like the other party is the first person who has the first right of refusal of owning the total sum of the property. I mean, the total ownership of the property. We treat it like it is an asset which is shared in the company. Although we didn't set up a company, it's just the name of two of us. So and usually the developer who sell property will ask, what is your relation between the two of you when you want to put the two names together? So this is easy because it's between sisters. So you say that you want to share it with your sister, so you want to co-own the property, and sign an agreement, although you know each other. So that dispute, if there is ever any dispute, it will be easy to divide it. Find a lawyer, a good lawyer, a property lawyer who understand corporation in Malaysia. So they will do the agreement for you. So if there are ever any dispute, because if you are not married yet, but once you are married, if you have children, if you have a husband, you have spouses, you might need to deal with that issue too.
Are there black and white that can be done about expenses and maintenance, you know, stuff like cukai pintu or, you know, other related costs? Would that fall under what you've mentioned, or do you need to maybe have a separate agreement, or can these agreements come later after you've gotten the place, you know?
No, I think you should sign an agreement, a site agreement separate from the sale and purchase agreement to govern who owns, who has to pay what, who has to. Because in my years of experience, I've seen because it's when both parties are still alive, it's easier. But if one of them pass on, then it becomes more complicated because that will be an issue of who has to pay for the whole thing. And of course, when you take a property nowadays, if you take a loan to buy a property, you have to have the MRTA, the term takaful or term insurance to pay off your loans if there are any balance that need to be paid. So make sure that you take an MRTA when you apply for the loan, and that will settle if any one of you pass on.
All right. Okay. We're going to take a short break right now, so don't go anywhere because we've got more questions for Khairul. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're tuned into The Prop Show in the Morning Run. I'm Sim Wee Boon, and I have Khairul Anwar Shahruddin, a lawyer and author, with me here today for the monthly property legal clinic that takes place every last Friday of the month. Now, we move to this next question from Fred. He describes his situation as such. I live in a high-rise in KL, and my neighbours have a small dog in their unit. I understand that DBKL laws allow for smaller breeds of dogs in the apartments and condominiums in Kuala Lumpur. But my issue here now is that my neighbour's pet has been a nuisance to me. And there's been several instances where the dog has pooped in my front door. And I know this because there are no other pets on the floor that I'm in. I've approached my neighbours, but they've denied it. So he wants to know, what can he do? Does he complain to the condo management? Is there any enforcement counsel that he can approach?
This question from Fred is actually related to the first question about living in the condominium and having problem. Although the first question was about water leakage from floor above, and this one is about pet. He already approached his neighbor and trying to solve it. So his neighbor is not really, he did deny that it is their pet. For all you know, it's a stray pet, okay? Because I've seen a few issues where a stray dog come in and do their business, and then nobody want to claim that it's theirs. So in the high rise, the person that you the party that you must approach is, again, it must be the joint management body or the management corporation, okay, depending on who is managing the condominium. And you bring this issue of they have to govern everything, and they are also the one which is considered the executive part of the condominium. So they have the also a committee, this joint management body or management corporation. They have a committee above them, which is mostly the Fred's neighbors. So if the management, the JMB or management corporation, the office cannot do anything, you have to call for a meeting or bring it during the meeting of the JMC, Joint Management Committee or Management Corporation, and bring up this issue of a dog running around doing their business in front of your house. So it might be, for us listening to this, it might be, this is a small matter. Why bring up this issue to a management corporation or your committee, right? But it is a big thing when every day you open the door and then you have to clean it up, the droppings and everything. So it become a nuisance to you. So you can suggest a house rule about ownership of dogs. If you are not comfortable with it, you have to say to ask your joint management committee or your management corporation to make a rule, a house rule, that nobody can own a dog. I mean, it might be a bit cruel, but it's something that you have to live with. So it in a condominium, you can bring it to your management corporation and set up a rule that nobody can own dogs, or they have to make sure their dogs do their business every day at certain times somewhere outside of the if they own it. So if you still feel kasihan, you don't want to impose that rule, you can ask your management corporation to set up that rule. If you want to complain to DBKL, that is if you have a landed property. If you own a landed property, and your property is inside the authority of DBKL, then you bring it to DBKL. If this is an issue of a condominium, if you, the whole condominium is governed by your management corporation, not DBKL.
Okay. Last question. Last month, there is the Apex Court ruled that management corporations and joint management bodies can ban short-term rentals through their own house rules. I want to discuss the implications of this ruling with you. I mean, no doubt this applies to people that have units in strata, have a strata units, and they plan or have been doing so, renting their places out to via Airbnb and all these other platforms. Does this Apex Court ruling change everything for these people, or is this just applied to this one situation, this one court situation?
No, it will apply to everybody in certain areas. I use myself as an example. See, but okay, I did own Airbnb short-term rental property somewhere in Mount Kiara, but now it can't be rented out anymore because of this ruling. Because and if you go to Pulau Pinang, it is worse, you know, because this thing has become a war between the local authority, condo management, and the owners, because the owners themselves are not really living around the area. So the other neighbors are complaining about people coming in, not knowing who they are. They use the facilities. Coming in, parking their cars, sometimes indiscriminately blocking people. So it is a problem that is being faced by the real owner who lives there, or the tenants who live within that place. So when it comes to short-term rental, I myself understand the problem. And it is a fine line of trying to make money off your own property and people who are living within the condominium. So the ruling the implication will be certain condominium can decide on their own of the house rule. So that particular decision is about the management corporation can set up ruling that the one that I said apply to about having dogs and everything, whether you can rent out your property on a short-term rental or not. So I bet all the owner who are doing the short-term rentals will try to circumvent the ruling. The easiest way is to claim whoever renting your property is actually related to you, is your relatives, is your siblings or something like that. But as time goes by, I think all management corporation or JMB will wise up whether you are doing a short-term rental or not. So certain developer actually has been selling property specifically for short-term rental, especially those with the dual key property.
Yep.
I think you've seen it around town,
yep,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So that dual key is the idea for you to live in the condominium while having a neighboring property, which is actually a part of your condominium too, but for you to rent out. For you to rent out on a long term or short term. But that idea is basically for short term rentals. Actually, that's the idea.
But this is just for strata titles, right? This situation has not
yes,
walked into yes, landed properties,
no,
homes,
no, no, no,
and all. These properties still very much have short term rental without any objections.
The business of short term rentals has been in most platform, whatever it is. It is mostly on strata property. I think 70% of the strata property around town who has this this business strata, that is not the landed. The landed, I think, is maybe 20 to 30%.
So really, there's all these 70% strata title owners that are looking in short-term rentals. They are all affected and there really is no other option unless,
no,
of course...
It depends on their management corporation. Mm.
But there's nothing to stop from all, if all these management corporations decide to, there's really nothing to stop it, right?
But that management corporation can be influenced because it's you. If you own, 100 units there, So get a seat in your management corporation committee and voice out, because you own a lot. Because I know certain business are doing it as a pure business, and they are not owners like you and me who owns one property in a condominium somewhere in Petaling Jaya. Or they do it as a whole business. I think this particular business is not inherent to Malaysia. We are not as the issue of short-term rental in Malaysia is not as inherent. It's not as bad as in London or New York, where the local authority has put up rules which we can only imagine. If you want to do short-term rental, it will be they limit the time that you can rent out your property, and during summer, how many times can they do it? So that. We don't really have that much problem about short-term rental.
All right. And that's all the time we have for this month's Monthly Property Legal Clinic. Thank you for coming on the show, Khairul. That was Khairul Anwar bin Shaharuddin, a lawyer with Khairul, Suhaila and Hazlina, specializing in property, banking and corporate law with more than 20 years experience. He's written a few books under the Ask the Lawyer series about buying properties in Malaysia and applying for property loans. Join us again next month as we try to help shed some light on your legal conundrums. Send your questions to property@bfm.my or WhatsApp us at 018-789-88. I'm Sim Wee Boon, signing off for the Morning Run. We've got a 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, followed by Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.